What grade were you teaching in this film?
I was teaching a third, fourth combination class.
And do you still, and what community was that in?
It was in Forest Knolls, which is in the San Geronimo Valley, which is in western Marin County, about 45 minutes north of San Francisco.
You still live there?
Yes, I do.
You still see the children from the film?
I not only see the children from the film, but I continue to visit the school on a weekly basis, so I still know everyone from kindergarten up.
This was 6 or 7 years ago, your final year of teaching, is that correct?
Correct, 2005-2006.
What do you think when you see the film today?
You know, I've watched this, I've lived with this film ever since I retired. In a certain way, I'm frozen in that year, but it's amazing how enjoyable it is to me to watch it every time. The lives of those children are very dear to me, and I see their whole being when I watch the film.
One thing that stood out for me, and maybe it was different 6 or 7 years ago, but I look at this classroom, there are no computers in it.
No, that's not true. There were computers, and you missed them. They were in the hallway. There were a couple of times when I used them. And I also had something called an Alpha Smart, which is a small, it's a little bit like a laptop. But it's true that computers were not a major part of what the way I taught, but that was purposeful. That wasn't because of it being 6 years ago. I think there's a very important place for children to understand how to use digital media and how to use computers for research and to make their work, to do various kinds of presentations with their work. But I think that school is a time when kids need to be social, be interacting with each other, be working with actual materials rather than virtual materials a lot of the time, particularly in elementary school. I think that developmentally they need to be kinesthetic learners as well as intellectual learners, so they need to be using their hands and their bodies. And I see that so I see computers as a tool that's needed in the classroom, but not the major way that young children should be learning things.
You don't think they should be the primary focus? I seem to hear this from a lot of school districts. Some of them even, you know, are looking to see if they can purchase laptops or tablets for every child in the classroom. Would you prefer to see less of an emphasis on that technology?
You know, I personally think that laptops are a great way to go if you're going to have computers, just because they don't take up as much space, and you can, so a dedicated computer room isn't necessary. I don't think that there is one way to teach. And I think that it's really important for teachers to find what works for them with their children. But I do think that it's important to make sure that children are moving and involved with real objects and each other during the school day. And if computers is not allowing that, then computers are not a good idea.
Engaged with each other in a face-to-face fashion rather than through sending text or emails to each other.
Exactly. How do you, I'm very concerned with people developing empathy. I think that our society is desperately in need for people who understand each other and who make an attempt to understand each other. And you can't do that without being in contact with real people, judging how they move, interacting in real time, watching their face, watching their bodies. And you don't do that in the same way when you're interacting virtually.
There were no grades given in this class, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
How do you gauge a child's success?
Well, if you watched the film, did you feel like you saw children growing?
Sure.
So every day I was in close contact with every child in that room. I responded to their questions. I asked them questions. I looked at their actual work, and I saw them grow. I had various ways that I kept track of that growth. They were all fairly simple and direct, looking at their work, looking at their earlier work, and judging their progress by how much each one of them was growing and changing. Sometimes you're really clear that a child has an issue that they need to be dealing with. Their reading is not moving along, or you see that they don't understand math concepts. And sometimes you need somebody beyond the classroom teacher. No, I needed somebody beyond myself to give me feedback. And occasionally that meant some kind of group of tests to look at to see is there a pattern that I couldn't see myself. So I'm not against using tests to identify things, but the use of tests to assess has particularly high-stakes tests or standardized tests have limited use for me in the classroom. Much more useful for me was direct contact with students and watching their growth.
Are the tests too general? They're not allowing each child to perhaps progress, learn at their own rate. That you're under this pressure with tests to get everybody up to this certain plateau by a certain time.
There's that. There are so many things that come into this testing piece. One of them is that most of our tests are made to find out who doesn't know rather than who knows. So if a teacher is teaching something and it's clear that everybody knows it, probably that won't be found on the standardized test, because the test is a bell curve. All these tests are graded on a bell curve, so they're meant to find out who's best and who's got the most and who's got the least, and you don't and put a bunch of them sort of in the middle. So if you knew that every child was understood a certain concept in a general way, it probably wouldn't come up on the test. So besides the fact that every child learns at a different rate, the tests themselves are not geared to giving you a real reflection of what you've taught. So that for me is a big problem with depending on them. Then you add the high stakes part, which means that teachers, no matter how much they say they're not teaching to the test, are under pressure to show that their students will perform on those particular tasks that are put onto that test, which may have nothing to do with what that child needs that year.
Were your students required at some point to take some sort of statewide standardized test to show achievement in that school?
In California, parents have it's written into our ed code that a parent can opt their child out of standardized testing. So standardized tests were offered just as they are here. In fact, it's the same time frame, March. And every year, parents who want their children tested, those children are tested. The majority of the parents in our school choose not to have their children tested. And they choose it for a variety of reasons, very thoughtfully.
How long were you a teacher?
I started teaching in 1968 in Dayton, Ohio. I drove an art cart in two inner-city schools. I saw 500 children a week. I've been teaching ever since.
I imagine at some point in your career, perhaps at the beginning, you taught the standard way that we see in most schools. When and how did you make this transition to the style that we saw in the film?
Well, actually, I don't think I ever really taught the standard way.
Okay.
I, you know, as an art teacher, I had a lot of freedom. In the first years of teaching, I was an art teacher. I certainly was more, I had less confidence in terms of letting children move freely in the early years, and it was as I watched how much children can take responsibility for themselves that I gave children I was willing. I didn't give it to them. I relinquished the power that I was holding over them that wasn't necessary, while at the same time maintaining the limits that an adult needs to maintain with children. My training was at Antioch College, which was a very liberal place and had a very progressive education department. So I already knew when I started teaching that that I wanted to follow the child rather than have the child do my dictums. And it was a matter of getting better at doing it rather than thinking that I was wanted to teach in one way and then realizing I wanted to teach in another. It was just finding out how to do that, which takes years. It takes years. Any teacher, any way that they're teaching, their first couple of years are going to be difficult because there's so teaching is a very complex art, and it takes a while to get skillful at it no matter how you do it.
And I think that comes through in the film. You needed a lot of different skills because you're dealing with a lot of individual characters who are your students.
Yes. They don't come in a single package. You don't get the average child. There is no such thing. And they walk into school having had whatever issues happened that very morning, as well as whatever issues are large, loom large in their life in general. And they come with different aptitudes and temperaments.
What was the greatest challenge to, or what do you consider to be the greatest challenge to teaching in this style?
Maintaining balance. When you're in this role of carefully guiding without taking all, while you respect a child's natural path, you need to be looking. You need to spend a lot of time reflecting. Are you setting up the kinds of experiences that will allow for a balanced education?
Is this something that you think can be done at higher grade levels, middle school, high school, even college?
It is being done at all those mm-hmm. grade levels. On my website, I list some of the places that I found like that. High school is a really fertile place for this to happen because a lot of children drop out of high school because they're bored, because they don't feel empowered. And when you give them the chance to be engaged in their learning and respect them as for who they are, they come alive. And there are wonderful high schools. Often they're high schools that are considered alternative in other reasons. It may be a school that is taking children who have not been successful in the public schools. And because they haven't been successful, an alternative school is able to do things that aren't being done in the traditional school. But I think that those things could be done in the conventional school and keep more children happily engaged.
And what do you call this style of teaching?
There are so many different names for it. You could call it progressive education. You could call it child-centered education. You could call it holistic education. Constructivist is another word that's used because you're constructing the education from the base of who the child is. All of them have their merits and their special pieces, but they all fall under this larger heading, I would say, of progressive education.
Okay. And do they all utilize the sort of open classroom rather than having everyone sitting at desks in a row? They all kind of use this more open style in the classroom?
Not all of them. Some of them, I think that a teacher could have children sitting in desks and still teach this way if they are respecting those children and those children's needs. In other words, if you kept a child at a desk all day long and never let them up, I don't think that you'd be respecting that child's needs. But among the classes that I took as a child, at least one of them, where I was sitting in a desk most of the day, was a very wonderful class where I felt completely acknowledged by the teacher. So I don't think it's a matter of how you set up the desks. I think it's an intention in your heart that makes the difference.
Ian, you mentioned, I believe in the film, something that has stuck with you apparently all these years is a teacher put you down for being left-handed.
Yeah, in second grade, my Mrs. Smith, she called me sloppy. And it was because as I wrote, nobody knew how to teach left-handed people then. And so as I wrote, I smudged the words. And she held up my paper and said, "Look at sloppy Amy's work." And it still makes me sad.
And that doesn't seem like it would have been all that long ago, really, that for society to not recognize some people are simply left-handed, just as some of us wear glasses or whatever the case might be.
The growth in teacher training in the past couple of decades is really quite phenomenal. And I think that the teachers who I had in the 1950s felt that their role was to maintain order, that piece of power that she had was to keep me in line, and that was the major piece of what she was doing. But there were always good teachers too. It's the individual, and what you keep on hoping, I keep on hoping, is that we can train our teachers well enough to also help those who don't belong in the classroom to choose a different occupation. I think that in that teacher training process, there should be enough time for teachers to be in a classroom, to experience what that is like, and to work with a master teacher so that they know that they can respect children and work with them in ways that are going to be positive for them.
Yeah, and you mentioned in the film also teachers who made a very positive impact on you.
Yes, I have many happy memories from teachers that I had. Mrs. Guilfoyle, who taught me songs that I can still sing, and Mr. Longo, who allowed us to talk about our real lives in school, to bring in the real problems that we had and not to hush them up, but to actually listen to us in middle school, which was a time where, you know, you really are just beginning to figure out that you are an individual who may have things about you that other people don't like, and how are you going to deal with that? And to have somebody who let us talk about that and figure out and feel good about ourselves was very important.
Did they inspire you to become a teacher?
Them and my dad. My dad was a teacher, and so I come from a family of teachers, but certainly those were teachers who inspired me.
As you look back on your career, what's the most rewarding thing about it?
I have lived in the same community for almost 40 years. So children who I had in the early years are now community members with me. And one of the most rewarding things that happens to me is when I'm on a committee and one of my former students is heading the committee, and we have a conversation where I can feel where I can respect them as adults and learn from them. That is just such a marvelous feeling.
To have them as peers rather
yes.
than the teacher-student
yes. Yes.
relationship.
To recognize that is a lifelong relationship, that the things that you do with a six-year-old stay with them and that relationship is a lifelong relationship if you want it to be.
And one final question. You also find it's important to have parents in the classroom. They can play an important role and not just be sort of an intimidating force looking over your shoulder to make sure their kid is getting the proper education, that the parents can contribute to a classroom.
The parent is the most, for that parent, that child is the most important thing. To isolate them from the classroom, to me, seems wrong. But I think that to include parents means that you have to set up a receptive relationship where the parent and the teacher feel that they're working as a team. And I was able to do that. There are many parent participation schools in the country who have developed ways of doing that that are very successful.
Anything you want to add?
I hope that people will take seriously the idea that our education system needs to get back to teaching meaningfully. I'm very concerned that we have put all our eggs in the basket of standardized tests that have limited and narrowed what teachers can do. One of the saddest things that happens to me when I show this film is teachers who come up to me in tears afterwards and say, I used to teach this way, but I can't anymore. I think that's criminal. And we need to get back to what the real goal of education is, which is to create, to engender creative, empathetic, productive citizens of a democracy.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.